This is Focus West Michigan for Tuesday, March 17, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. A Dutch princess is visiting Grand Rapids this week, honoring Kelvin University's 150th anniversary, WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
Princess Laurentian of the Netherlands led a ceremonial tree planting on the lawn of the DeWitt Manor House Monday, symbolizing Kelvin University's deep historical roots and commitment to future growth.
That is, for me, what a tree symbolizes. It is at the cross point of the now, the past, and the future.
The event is a focal point for the institution's sesquicentennial this year. Founded in 1876 by Dutch immigrants, Kelvin's president Greg Elzinga says the Christian liberal arts institution now has 3,600 students from 48 states and more than 60 countries.
We're bringing together young women and men from across the country and around the world into a campus community to learn together and to prepare them to go out and make a difference in the world.
Princess Laurentian is globally recognized for her work in literacy, sustainability, and creative solutions to social challenges. She applauds Kelvin's culture, encouraging students to think critically and act justly.
Movements are built by individuals who step forward, don't shy away from their values, and following their path.
This is the third Dutch royal family visit, with earlier trips in 1952 and 1982. I'm Dee Morrison.
On Tuesday, pre-K students at Grand Rapids Montessori Academy gained a deeper understanding of what it's like living with a visual impairment. WGVU's David Limbaugh has more.
Abby Caroma's daughter, Jubilee, began attending Grand Rapids Montessori Academy last year. Jubilee is visually impaired.
My daughter has low vision. She's legally blind. And so we are celebrating this as an entire school to highlight this important literacy method.
Caroma and Jubilee's teacher, Tracy Morgan, are raising student awareness launching Braillebration, where students rotate through three hands-on stations. They learn how the visually impaired navigate the world and use a Braille typewriter. Students speak with visually impaired adults to learn firsthand what it was like for them growing up.
We have a young lady who is a college student, totally blind, and she's doing a read aloud and then also answering questions that the students have about Braille and blindness.
Morgan says she hopes students gain a better understanding of what it's like to be differently abled.
Empathy and compassion for others, and no matter who they are, right? And just know that everybody's doing the best they can on any given day, and to give them that grace.
I'm David Limbaugh.
Last week, we told you how one in four Michiganders are planning vacations for spring break. This week, experts are encouraging those same travelers to pack their patience. As WGVU's Jennifer Moss reports, spring break flyers need to be prepared for long security lines.
We recently reported on a new AAA survey showing that 26% of Michiganders plan to travel for spring break. Today, as vacation time draws near and the partial government shutdown continues, AAA is encouraging travelers now to prep for longer wait times and increased congestion. They say airports are reporting unusually slow security processing right now. Adrienne Woodland, spokesperson for AAA The Auto Club Group, says, quote, spring break is always a busy time for airports, but this year we are seeing additional pressure on security lines due to TSA staffing limitations, adding travelers should expect slower lines at some airports. The best way to avoid missed flights is to arrive early and stay informed, end quote. Tips for air travelers facing those slower security lines include arriving at least 2 to 3 hours in advance, even for domestic flights. Book your airport parking in advance and use your airline's mobile app so you can get notifications. Plus, check TSA wait times before leaving home. You can use airport websites or the MyTSA app to get real-time estimates. And, of course, pack your patience. I'm Jennifer Moss.
Gildas Club Grand Rapids is thanking West Michigan audiences who came out to see over 30 comedians during Laugh Fest 2026. WGVU's Phil Dawson reports money raised helps Gildas Club provide free emotional support for people fighting cancer or grieving a death.
We are very grateful to the community who has helped support us.
Vice President of Development Sean Campbell says Laugh Fest 2026 set records.
This has been an amazing Laugh Fest. We've had many sold out shows. We are so excited to be in new venues. We've had record selling sales and just a lot of laughs to help support Gildas Club.
After over 30 shows featuring national and local comedians at venues big and small, the 16th Laugh Fest wrapped up on Sunday. It raises money to help Gildas Club Grand Rapids provide free emotional support for children, adults, families, and friends of people fighting cancer or grieving a death.
It's a really great way to spread the awareness about our free services that we provide and ensure that no one's facing life's tough stuff alone. We are able to do that by all the people coming out and supporting these shows.
The festival is over, but LaughFest 2026 is providing one more night of comedy on March 25th. During their annual Red Door Gala at Frederick Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park.
As we celebrate our 25th year of service of Gilda's Club.
I'm Phil Dawson.
A fast-growing Ottawa County township is pausing new development requests, allowing time for an impact review on existing infrastructure, WGVU's Dee Morrison reports.
We need to do it right, because let's face it, when your basement fills up with sewage, you will not call the developer. You will call the township.
That's Georgetown Township Trustee Gary Valdink speaking at the March 9th board meeting in favor of a moratorium on new development proposals for the next 8 months. Township leaders want time to study how future growth could strain roads, water, sewer, and fire systems. Board Clerk Kelly Kuiper says a moratorium is premature.
I just don't think we have the appropriate data to say that it's the right decision today, and more importantly, that it's the right decision to enact as an emergency moratorium without the proper public notice.
Several developers oppose the moratorium, raising concerns about increased costs. Michael McGraw is with Eastbrook Homes, currently building several developments in the township.
So we can continue to support the roughly 100 employees and 600 contractors who rely on a steady stream of work from us. And to have a big gap in that would be injurious to a lot of people who rely on us for employment and putting food on their table.
The board voted unanimously to approve the moratorium, which will not affect projects with preliminary approval or property owners building a single-family home. I'm Dee Morrison.
Coming up soon, an edited version of one of the new episodes of our Powerful Women Let's Talk podcast, but first, news from around the state. Jewish state officials in Michigan are speaking out against anti-Semitism following an attack at a Metro Detroit temple last week. Colin Jackson has more.
State data show Jews face the highest rates of religious-based hate crime. Muslims face the second highest. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel says the continued anti-Jewish sentiment made attacks like last week's all the more likely. Nessel says anti-Semitism has become, in her words, far too comfortable.
It's been welcomed into conversations at the dinner table, classrooms, and even at the White House. It should not have been inevitable. It doesn't have to continue, but it is on each and every one of us to stop it.
Nessel and other officials are calling for stronger laws against terroristic threatening, coordinated resources put towards stopping extremist violence, and more money for Jewish community safety. I'm Colin Jackson in Detroit.
The Whitmer administration and Michigan House Republicans have agreed to put a legal fight over GOP-ordered budget cuts on hold because a settlement may be in sight. We have more from Rick Pluta.
This is a legal fight over spending power. Last year, Republicans on the State House Appropriations Committee used a unique authority to block $645 million in budget items that were already approved and signed into law. They sued to stop the Whitmer administration from spending it. At this point, it appears about $370 million in community grants remains at stake because it is either unspent or not legally committed. Now both sides say they may be close enough to resolve the dispute without further legal wrangling. This is playing out as the governor and the legislature are also working on the final budget of her administration. I'm Rick Pluta.
Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. In an edited version of this episode of Powerful Women Let's Talk, Shelley Irwin is joined by Samantha Scott, co-owner and president of Preferred Employment and Living Supports, and Athena Young Professional Award winner, to talk about her love of service, her community work, and more.
From WGVU Public Media, this is Powerful Women Let's Talk. Conversations with women making an impact in West Michigan. Stay connected to Powerful Women. Please like and subscribe.
This season on Powerful Women for Women's History Month, we're looking at women who made history in West Michigan and women who are making history right now. Today, we look at a woman who is making history right now. So hello to you, Samantha Scott, co-owner, president of Preferred Employment and Living Supports. Hi to you, Samantha.
Hi, Shelley.
Good that you are here. How's it feel to know you are making history right now?
It's a heavy weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stay the course. We'll catch up with you 20 years from now. How's that?
It sounds good.
This is a special conversation, I know, surrounding the importance of acknowledging Women's History Month and more. As I mentioned right out the bat, we met. Congratulations on your most recent Athena on the Lakeshore Young Professionals Award. Where do you keep the... your trophy?
It's actually on a shelf in my office just above my head. Then I can see it when I'm in all my Zoom calls.
Good. Was that a surprise to you?
Was a huge surprise to me. I was not expecting that. I didn't even prepare anything to say because I really admired all of the women that were on the docket for that day. And so, yes, that was a complete surprise.
Yes, and we know that's an award that goes to a woman who serves her community, holds many tenets, including collaboration and giving back and more. Hence, perhaps why you are making history. From where did you get your love for service in the community, Samantha?
I would have to say that it started in college. I did my first organized philanthropic events through my sorority of Phi Sigma Sigma. And I eventually became the philanthropic chair of the sorority, and I just kind of fell in love with meeting all of the people and just seeing what the people's needs were, just expanding my thoughts outside of my own little community, my own little bubble, and to really dig in and see what was really going on. And so I wound up going into psychology, and I minored in sports medicine because I also have a love for the outdoors, and that was very important to me. And I wound up graduating with both degrees, and I wound up working with children with disabilities when I first got out of college, and it just kind of skyrocketed from there.
And look at you now. What's your day job?
So I am the president and co-owner of Preferred Employment Living Supports, and we have three locations along the lakeshore where we service individuals with disabilities.
What are the challenges you have with, let's just say, possibly an 8-to-5 job and mothering and wifing and serving in the community? Let's get that
out. Well, my job certainly is not 8-to-5. You know, it's
24/7.
I mean, and you just kind of sprinkle in what you're doing, right? So, my day starts at 5:30. Working out, because physical exercise is, it's really important in order to get my day set straight right off the bat. So, and then I'm answering emails while I'm waiting for my turn for the shower, or, getting the kids their breakfast or whatever that looks like. And so my work life really couldn't be more integrated in my home life, because I just do what I can when I can. And I have a lot of support from my husband. Love my husband. He does a great job supporting me. And then my team, they're just fantastic.
Let's hope you walk your dog, Kimber.
I do. There we go. Yes. Not as far as she used to. She's aging gracefully, but yes.
You mentor. You perhaps have been mentored. Talk to me about mentorship and its importance in your life. Perhaps who has shaped your life thus far, and whose life are you shaping today?
Sure. I think that mentorship is often overlooked in the leadership community. I think that people seek out mentorship from people who could, that they could gain financial assistance with, or that they could further their careers with, or things like that. And I think that mentorship starts at a personal level. And I really think that finding the right mentor could really shape the way that you view your leadership, which, yes, it in turn does assist you, furthering your career. But I think that it's important to find somebody, or multiple people, it doesn't have to be the same mentor, that can help you in all the aspects of your life. I think that, we all could use that outside view on what we're doing, and, somebody to brainstorm with, mentorship. And so I have my first formal assigned mentee from a program through Encompass Michigan. And that has been so much fun so far. Our personalities really align. So I really think that I got a gold nugget there with this young gal. But so seeing that structured and having to really think about that mentorship is a little bit different of a dynamic than having something easily flowing like you do with your friends or your family or your coworkers. So it's kind of interesting to see the different dynamics and the different options for mentorship.
And of course, from one for one who might not know you personally, you are mentoring just by being active and saying yes to community opportunities. You serve on the board for the Muskegon Area Promise Zone, as well as serving statewide initiatives as a board member of Encompass Michigan. Expand on this.
So I think that a leader really should be involved in their community, and if they have the opportunity, that they should be involved in initiatives larger than that too. So Encompass Michigan plays a huge role across the state of Michigan for agencies such as mine, and they really do a great job at providing resources and direction and assistance for agencies for funding or other opportunities, and really thinking outside the box so that agencies continue to do the work that they do. The Promise Zone, I don't know if you know anything about the Promise Zone. They are just wonderful. That is brand new to me, but it's a bunch of community members that are getting together that really care about the future of Muskegon or whichever zone that you're a part of, but they really want to invest in keeping students local and having them stay in their communities and really thriving in the community in which they grew up in. So I think that that's just a really, really cool thing to be a part of.
Tell me about your activity in Rotarianism in Muskegon and how you are serving the community this way.
So I am on the committee for there's a social committee, and I actually sit in on the orientations once a month. So that's a really cool opportunity to meet all of the incoming Rotarians at the first bat when they're first learning about Rotary. Some of the volunteer projects, we actually put a microforest in Muskegon, and we're working on the second one. I haven't been part of the second one, but I was able to go and help prep the site for the first one. But we have a very large Rotary organization, and I actually just got a phone call from the president today that they would like me to join their the board of Rotary. So I will start that next month.
Oh, you said yes.
Yes, I said yes.
Good. You're the member of the Jedi Committee,
yeah,
in Muskegon, and let's dig into this organization, creating awareness, somewhat of your day job as well, individuals with disabilities,
yes,
and explore that for me.
So Jedi stands for Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. And so that is, again, it's a group of community members, many of them working for agencies that service the individuals with disabilities. And so we put together a viewing of a film back last fall, I believe it was, at the Frauenthal. People from all over the state came to see it. And so that's kind of what we work on, is trying to create awareness within our community of the agencies and what we do, and of course about the people that we serve and their abilities.
Got to leave with this. What, as a kid growing up, one of your favorite things to do was scare your mom and brother at every possible opportunity? Where'd we get that?
Well, the way that our house was set up, there were a couple of hiding spaces. And my brother, he is just over a year older than I am, and he just really hates when I tell this story. But I used to hide around every corner that I could and just scare the bejeebas out of him, and he was always an easy target.
Samantha Scott, you are a powerful woman making history as we speak. Thank you.
Thank you.
Powerful Women Let's Talk is a production of WGVU Public Media. Episodes available at WGVUnews.org and on Apple and Spotify. Please like and subscribe.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Tuesday, March 17, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.